Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. How are you this morning?
I am well, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for asking.
Good.
I was really glad that you said something last week about this, and I know you've been a huge advocate in holding the feet to the fire for social media giants. I was very annoyed last week that there was a couple of articles actually kind of swarming around, and I saw it actually in my mom's group on Facebook, and I asked the administrator to take it down because it wasn't true about the COVID vaccine impacting pregnant women and leading to more miscarriages. Now, as I've told our audience, the CDC has absolutely no proof of that. I'm not sure where that came from, but it just kind of continues to build on the fears of getting the vaccine, which is not helpful whatsoever. So this morning, it sounds like you called out the big tech giants. So what's happening now?
I called out the big tech giants because they have a responsibility to really crack down on this outrageous untruth that can do great damage to our nation. Remember, spreading lies that counter public health can be severely dangerous. And here what we're seeing is lies about the vaccine, which make it look dangerous when it is certainly not for that reason or any other reason we know. It's been proved safe and effective. So the vaccine hesitancy that could be created by these kinds of messages deters people from taking the vaccine, which hurts all of us. The more people who fail to take the vaccine, the less safe we all are, because the vaccine spreads, whether we like it or not, among people who are vulnerable. And it also mutates, creating variants that may at some point be immune to or resistant to the vaccine. So we need to conquer this pandemic. It takes everyone participating. These kinds of lies create needless fear. And that's why I asked the big tech companies to show some responsibility and take them down.
So have you heard from Facebook or Twitter or any of these guys in response to this? Because you're right. I think, first of all, just to clear the records, our infectious disease doctors have said that if you are pregnant and you get the vaccine, it is not going to lead to your miscarriage if you do have one, God forbid. The only thing they said was if you are trying to start a family, it may interrupt that process for about 2 to 3 weeks. But if you were to then try again like a month after having the vaccine, you should be all set to get pregnant. So I just wanted to clarify that. But have you heard anything from Facebook, Twitter, or any of these guys?
We've heard some messages from them that they are going to act responsibly, but we are going to be vigilant, watch them, and make sure that they fulfill their responsibility. And you're absolutely right to clarify it. Very important to do so. And thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Talking to Senator Richard Blumenthal this morning. The reason I'm so amped on this, Senator Blumenthal, and I'm glad that you are an advocate for holding the feet to the fire, as I mentioned, is it does feel like constantly, no matter which side of the aisle you're on, it feels like they kind of make up the rules as they go along. Like if they want to start taking articles down because we're in a political season, they're going to do it, or they're going to ban people at random. And then there are times where they do like this, where you're impacting the entire country believing that this could lead to hurting a family. You know, have you addressed that at all? That, you know, it seems like when it's political, they kind of do whatever they want. They'll pull you, they'll ban you, they'll do whatever. But when it comes to spreading false lies in articles, I don't feel like they're on top of it as much.
You know, they have a unique position and protection under the law. For most of the rest of us, if we say something that's untrue, for example, if a publisher, your newspaper, says something that's untrue, knowing it to be untrue, they can be sued.
Right.
Big tech, no. So that particular provision of law, Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act, I have said should be reformed. And I have proposed, for example, and it's bipartisan, a specific measure that holds them responsible and accountable if they spread child sexual abuse material. In other words, pornographic images of children, mm-hmm. which are just abhorrent. They have fought these kinds of new laws that would hold them responsible. I think that it should apply across the board to other kinds of messages that they know to be untrue and hurtful and harmful, dangerous to people's health. And so I'm going to be advocating during this Congress, as I did last, measures like the Earn It Act, which I mentioned holds them accountable for those pornographic images that they can see on their sites.
That's
and they
disgusting.
Know hurt children, and they need to be held accountable.
I don't understand how anyone in their right mind could believe that they should be opposed to that. Like, what do they say on the other side? Why wouldn't they want to pass something like that?
They have a sort of mumbo-jumbo answer about the First Amendment. Sorry, the First Amendment doesn't apply to them. They're private companies. The First Amendment only applies to the government and only says to the government, you cannot impede free speech. A private company can do whatever it wants. But the most important point is they think of themselves as sort of a town square where people walk into it and they say whatever they want instead of a publisher like your local newspaper, which should be held responsible. And that's a fundamental difference in view. Mm. I think it is very much incumbent on them. They have a responsibility to prevent this kind of harm.
And I think, too, Senator, that I think social media has gone through a huge shift. I mean, I think we can all agree when Facebook came out, 15 years ago, the intention was really to be able to connect people from different parts of the globe or to be able to send pictures, you know, to grandma who lives in Florida. And then it really has taken a shift, I would say, in the last, like, you know, I would say the last 5 to 10 years almost, where now it's a place for people to share information. It's a place for them to share their political views, their standpoints. And I think that it's, you know, with anything, things have to grow and change. And I think maybe the intentions were there, but to rely on that and to say, oh, no, we're a platform that is for free. We don't charge anyone to use it. Like, that's true. But it's become destructive. It's become where some people are silenced, other people aren't. Some people are banned, others aren't. And now we're able to just spread information that truly is ineffective and could hurt our nation.
Not only that, Melissa, but this provision of law, Section 230, was passed at a time when all of these companies, Facebook, Google, they were all startups. Mm-hmm. They were tiny companies.
Right.
And now they are powerful behemoths. People think, oh, well, there's Instagram. Well, Instagram is owned by big tech.
Right.
All of these companies have gobbled up other startups so they could have a monopoly. And that's why antitrust lawsuits have been brought against them, and there'll be more. That's why people like yourself very understandably and rightfully say they have no consistency in what they enable to be put on their platforms and sometimes shut down others. So I think there needs to be a review so that they are held accountable and some public responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Senator Richard Blumenthal, keep chipping away at it. I really appreciate it, and we thank you so much for always coming on here. Have a great day.
You too, Melissa. Great to talk.
Take care. Thank you. You too.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoom Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Hey, good morning, Greg. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Melissa. Spring is in the air.
Yeah, it really is, and I am loving it. Now, Greg, there was a bill that you introduced last month, was introduced last month in Congress, but I know you're very passionate about it. It's the Preventing Future Pandemics Act. First of all, what is that?
Well, it's and just a little bit of background is that this is done by the AZA, and it's also with the Wildlife Conservation Society, which is the Bronx Zoo, and the corresponding zoos in New York. I sit on the on the AZA Government Affairs Committee, and this is part of what we do. Even though we're working here at the zoo on conservation and having a good place for people to visit, education, we're also looking at the business that we're in. Mm-hmm. So being part of this Government Affairs Committee, we looking at in state capital here, but also in D.C., looking at things that can impact animals, conservation, and what we do as a business. And one of the things that has been very, very up in the news lately, and again because of the pandemic, is how did the pandemic happen? What was the cause besides mm-hmm. it flashing through the country, through the world from people to people? There's a thing called zoonotic diseases.
It's like the animal markets, right?
Well, zoonotic diseases are diseases that can be passed from animals to people and mm-hmm. people to animals. Mm-hmm. So this is very critical. There are some that are very virulent for old world animals, such as the monkeys and macaques and gorillas and chimps, that really can have diseases that we can catch really easy. So when our animal care providers and other zoos are working with those old world primates, they have to wear PPP. All the time, PPE all the time. Mm-hmm. That's been doing forever, ever and ever. Not just because of the pandemic. So these zoonotic diseases are very, very can be very deadly and very important. So what's happening here is a thing. It's called bushmeat. If you want to get down to the basics of this, bushmeat. Bushmeat is people getting animals out of the wild and consuming them. Now it's been done for ages and ages and ages and ages.
Right.
However. As our populations are growing, as the world is getting more people in it, those people are going into those areas. People are going to those areas and getting animals that they normally wouldn't have used in the past because they're becoming scarce. So we're looking at, we talked about this before, people are going for turtles, reptiles, amphibians, birds, something, things that they really,
they never used to really traffic before.
Right. If you're going to go for the larger animals, but now those larger animals are starting to disappear. So you're starting to look at these types of things. And then it becomes an economic factor, too. People are doing this for money. It also becomes fad issues. People have it, and it's also for people that have traditional medicines and traditional things that they're looking for these things that they've had in the past. But these are things that we saw. We saw that the pandemic is really the cause of from jumping from animals to people. And the reason for that is going out and getting these things like bushmeat. So this Preventing Future Pandemics Act, which is Senate Bill 37 and the House of Representatives 151, is a bill that starts to try to prevent future zoonotic pandemics by closing markets to the import and export of these live wildlife for human consumption.
So So if it passed, this you're not just talking about throughout the United States. You're talking about if it came from other countries.
Right. This is to secure wildlife trade around the world.
Okay.
This is trying to close this because we've seen what's happened. And this is something that, again, it's also conservation. This is also we're wiping out species by doing this.
Sure.
So there's this is a double effect here. We're wiping out species, and we're also have that added problem that it could have a pathogen spill over to us. So this and so people then will ask, okay, well those indigenous peoples and other people that use the bushmeat for this, what would happen there? Well, this bill also looks at trying to support those people. Because, again, they don't have a stop and shop down the street.
Right.
The stop and shop is the jungle. So how do we do something? So that means that those indigenous peoples and those people that relied on bushmeat have to be supported by the international community to find sustainable ways that they can have food and sustenance without having to go into the jungle and get these animals out of here. So that's...
Are there any suggestions, Greg, how to do that? Like, I immediately think maybe not the jungle, but I remember when I lived in South Africa, there were certainly parts there where you're right. They had and that's why I kept kind of thinking back to the markets was they would sell bushmeat. That was how they mm-hmm. they survived. And understandably so, because I don't think I saw a grocery store for about 6 months while I lived in Africa. So what are some of the options that are on the table to relieve that? Then
Well, it's something I think that's really that there's a U.S. Agency for International Development, which is working with communities on this.
Gotcha.
And trying to, and looking at is it. And again, you can't take away the culture, and this is what that's always important. And this, and we could then skew from this directly into ecotourism, which we won't do right now.
Right.
But what can we do that doesn't take away culture, but helps support and sustain communities?
Yeah.
And is that showing a different way of getting food? Is it more farming? Is it crops? But again, this is not an easy bill. This is not easy. This is very, very difficult because it spans so many different areas. But in the zoo world, it touches us.
Right.
It touches us
of course.
Deeply because these animals are being exterminated, and now it's made a direct impact that the zoo has been impacted of because we've been closed for the pandemic. So I think we need to start someplace. And it's been very heartening that we've seen this kind of be and we don't see this very often, a bipartisan program that people in Congress are looking at this as being important.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's Senate Bill 37, House of Representative 151. If you went on, it's a hashtag Protect Wildlife, Protect Us, which is a very apt thing that the World Conservation Society has put, Wildlife Conservation Society has put together, hashtag Protect Wildlife, Protect Us. You can go on there and see what they're looking at, and you can support this bill. And again, it helps us all.
What is that website again, Greg?
It's a hashtag Protect Wildlife, Protect Us, and you can go to the Wildlife Conservation Society, which is, I'm trying to figure out what their address is here. It's WCS.org.
Okay. All right.
And take a look at that. And again, we're going to be having actually as part of this AZA committee, Government Affairs Committee, we're going to have a fly-in, which we're actually not flying anywhere this time, but we're going to zoom in to the Capitol, which we have done every year, except for the past two, to talk to our legislators on all those bills that are up there that have impacts on wildlife and conservation. And so we'll be sending out invitations to all of our representatives. Senator Blumenthal was just on a little while ago. He's been a big supporter of conservation, probably going to be a big supporter of this act also.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Greg, thank you for breaking this down for us, bringing our attention to it, and good luck. I hope that we see some changes really soon.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
Thank you. You too. And we're checking in right now with Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau. Luke, how are you this morning?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for asking. So this week, America Saves Week, and it's basically talking about the importance of saving your money right now more than ever before. Had this been around before? I had never heard of America Saves Week. What's it all about?
Yes. Yeah. Every year, the Better Business Bureau and several other organizations in Connecticut, kind of team up to stress the importance of saving, why it's important, and how it cannot be scary. So it's been happening for quite some time now. And as the Better Business Bureau, we definitely see it as important to, be saving and doing things so that you can be a smart consumer in the end.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So what are some of the things that you're talking about? First of all, why is it so hard for people to save?
Sure. So a lot of people say, I don't make enough to save. Even if I do, it's not going to amount to anything. And really, if you save automatically, that's your best bet of being successful when it comes to creating any type of savings goal. So even if you just have a couple dollars each week sent to a different account, it will add up. And don't just leave it in your checking account either, because then you're tempted to spend it.
Yes. Yes, you are. Yep. I understand that way too well. That's very true. Now, what about saving for, we always talk about retirement, obviously, which, even at my age, we're thinking about retirement already. Not to say I'm not happy at my job, but, we all dream of being on the sunny beaches of Florida one day. So other than saving for retirement, what are some other things that we should almost look ahead to, like the unexpected or debt or something?
Sure. So debt's a great topic, too. So if people have debt, they say, should I save? Should I be paying off debt? What do I do? And definitely if you have debt, you should be paying that off first. So don't worry about having a ton of savings in an account. Again, if you have a lot of debt, you're paying high interest. So it's going to save you if you pay off that debt and then create a savings account. And then also, if you want something to like look forward to, it's always a great tip to save as a family too. So teach your kids how to save, the importance of it, and how, you know, if you save, you can go on a trip possibly next year. If you haven't gone anywhere the last 2 years because of COVID, you know, have them put something into an account each week or month or who knows, and show them if they grow an account, you can take a great vacation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. We actually, in our house, we booked a vacation with our best friends for 2022. And we were just saying to them that it's crazy. Like, by the time we get there, this thing's going to be done. We're going to be done paying it off. It's going to be very exciting, which we never usually do, because you usually book a vacation and you're like, 6 months later, I'll go. And you kind of feel the pain right then and there. You're like, oof, all right, that hurt. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. You know, it's been a little bit of time and people may not travel for another year or two. So why not start saving? I love that idea. Yeah. Talking to Luke Fry this morning of the Better Business Bureau, we're talking about the importance of saving your money right now. And the Connecticut Saves campaign, I know, has planned several events, like a free virtual kickoff event designed for everyone from business owners to families, and will include an interactive trivia, which happened earlier this week, actually, which is really cool. But also, you know, it looks like there's some kind of a pledge, Luke, that I'm seeing here. What's that all about? Like, what's the point of the pledge and how can people get involved with it?
Yeah, so we encourage everybody to take the Connecticut Saves pledge. You can do that at ConnecticutSaves.org or by texting CTSaves to 877-877. And what that is, it basically tells us what your savings goal is, and then it texts you and or emails you periodically and kind of keeps you motivated and kind of gives you some pointers and tips to keep you on that savings goal.
That's really cool. So what is the number again if people want to get involved with this?
Sure. So you can take the pledge at ConnecticutSaves.org or text CTSaves to 877-877.
All right. Simple enough. Well, Luke, this is really, really cool. I love this idea. Now, Savings Week ends tomorrow, technically, but I mean, you could save at any point. You really don't have to wait or do it during this week event. You can literally start saving whenever you want.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an all year thing, and it's definitely not something that happens overnight. Again, to all of those people who say, I don't make enough to save, you can always save something. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a couple dollars each week, it will add up by the end of the year and hopefully by next Connecticut Saves Week.
Yes, that's very true. I love that goal. All right, Luke, thank you so much. We appreciate having you on this morning.
All right. Yeah, thank you.
All right. Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau here on WICC 600. Well, today, if you didn't know, is February 25th. It's also the launch of the 8th annual Giving Day. And I love Giving Day. It gives back to many nonprofits in our area right here in Fairfield County. And there's a virtual 24-hour fundraiser that's organized by the foundation to help hundreds of these nonprofits across our county. This is the Fairfield County's Community Foundation I'm talking about. And this morning joining me is Briggs Tobin, who's the chairman of the board. And Briggs, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
I'm well, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for supporting Giving Day.
Absolutely. So Briggs, first of all, I think sort of the elephant in the room we should address is the fact that nonprofits have gone through so much, especially in this last year with the pandemic. So how crucial would you say more than ever this Giving Day is this year?
Well, Melissa, I would just echo your words more than ever. I mean, we all know the incredible disruptive effects that have happened as a result of COVID. Lots of individuals and small businesses have been hit very, very, very hard. And if there's ever a time to support the organizations that pick up the load, where government doesn't serve and where business doesn't serve us, this is the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how many nonprofits are you guys hoping to raise money for today?
Well, we have over 400.
Wow.
Who have signed up. And as of the latest look, we've gotten donations so far for about 280 of them. Now, we're only 8 hours in to the effort. It's as you said, it's a 24-hour online fundraising program, and a lot will happen throughout the day. So we're looking, it feels like a very good start. And we're looking for a big day today.
I was telling a lot of our listeners earlier, and I'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit more about this, Briggs. You know, sometimes a lot of these nonprofits don't see as many funds as they could because people simply don't know that they exist. How can people kind of find out, you know, if they're passionate about animals, for example, or they're passionate about the arts, or, you know, there are so many different avenues you could go. How do they figure out which nonprofits even exist in our area?
Well, in terms of today's fundraiser, the best way to do that is just to go to fcgives.org, and it's very easy. You can search by the name of the organization, or you can search by the town that you live in, or you can search by the particular cause that the organization supports. So it's really easy to find the ones who are most aligned with your particular interest in terms of the platform that we've set up. Beyond that, the foundation itself, you mentioned before, Fairfield County's Community Foundation, has a website, fccfoundation.org, which has lists of lots of different organizations in our county that serve all sorts of different needs.
We're talking this morning with Briggs Tobin, who's actually with the Fairfield County's Community Foundation. He's the chairman of the board there, actually, and has been a member of the FCCF board since 2015, became the chairman actually just this past summer, which congratulations to that. You know, Briggs, I wasn't sure if you could kind of give us an outlook at how Fairfield County has done with their nonprofits. Like we mentioned at the top of this segment, the pandemic has been incredibly hard on our businesses. Pretty much every aspect of our lives has been challenged by the pandemic. Have you found that nonprofits have either that we've seen a decrease in nonprofits, that they have, I don't want to use the word dissolved, but have we seen, you know, an uptick in dissolved, or have they stayed alive? Like, can you give us kind of just an outlook of how our nonprofits have been doing?
Well, I think they've been doing okay. But I mean, here's what I would say is that when the pandemic hit in March, I think everybody was looking as if we were going over a cliff into an abyss. I mean, I think fundraising effectively just stopped very briefly, and then I think, thanks to the generosity of people who live in our county, people realized that we needed to dig in, and so with that help, organizations have been able to, I would say, hang on and keep going. But that's not enough. I mean, the need has really grown as well. So it's not enough just to hang on. I think what we all need to realize is that the need out there is so much greater, and everything we can do to help is so appreciated.
Can you give us that website one more time, Briggs? And even after the 24 hours are up, people can still access this website to donate, or how will that work?
Well, the website is fcgives.org. That's the Giving Day website. After today ends, it will be closed. You can still go to the website and see how it turned out and how your particular organization did in terms of its fundraising. It's the signups have closed, but for any organization that wants to participate next year, that's the place to start. And I just also want to say that the foundation, in addition to sponsoring Giving Day, does a lot for nonprofits generally through our Center for Nonprofit Excellence. We offer leadership training, strategic planning training, just how to run a business, how to engage in effective fundraising. And these things go on throughout the year. So for organizations out there who want to take advantage of this, again, go to Fairfield County's Community Foundation website, look for the Center for Nonprofit Excellence, and get in touch with us. We'd love to help.
Briggs, we thank you so much for coming on this morning. Good luck. I'm hoping that a lot of nonprofits get the financial stability that they really need right now and they deserve. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Melissa. And for all of your listeners out there, please do what you can to support the nonprofit sector as well as the community foundation. We really very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.